Welcome to the OT's Gone Rogue podcast, where we are all about supporting OTs who are choosing to think outside the box and do things differently. I'm your host, Melissa Lapointe. Over the years, I've had the pleasure of connecting with the most remarkable therapists who are finding their way as thought leaders, change makers, and heart-led entrepreneurs. They've helped to inspire me to think big and be brave in terms of finding my voice, putting myself out there, and bringing my work to a bigger stage. This podcast is a culmination of my personal and professional experiences as it relates to family wellness, women's health, coaching, overcoming adversity, brain health, and entrepreneurship. I'm using this platform to share inspirational stories, words of wisdom, and tangible resources where we can help more OTs around the globe to take the road less traveled, even when it feels messy and uncomfortable. Okay, are you ready to join us? This is the OTs Gone Rogue podcast. Hey everyone, Melissa Lapointe here, and welcome back to another episode of the OTs Gone Rogue podcast. Today, we get to talk about so many of my favorite things: pediatrics, sensory processing, challenging behaviors, pelvic health. Oh my goodness, I could have talked to today's guest for hours. Kiara Smith is an OT that's been practicing for over 10 years in both California and Hawaii. She's worked in various settings, including hospitals, schools, an equine center providing hippotherapy, and outpatient clinics. Her pediatric experience encompasses infants, toddlers, children, and adolescents with pelvic floor dysfunctions and toileting challenges. With a holistic and integrative approach to care, along with her canine assistant, Nellie, Kiara guides children in achieving continence with confidence. Oh, gosh, I love that tagline. Okay, are you ready to learn more? Please join me in welcoming Kiara to the podcast. All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of the OTs Gone Rogue podcast. Kiara, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Melissa. I am so excited to be here.
I'm excited for you to be here as well, though I intentionally did not say that. So as we're working more on the podcast, I'm really becoming aware of words that I use a lot. And I love my guests. And I've noticed that I would say 99.9%, if not 100% of my guests, I say, I'm so excited for you to be here. But I really am. I just have to find new words.
Yeah, we need to find other synonyms for that word.
Oh gosh, life lessons from a podcast. I am trying to remember when I first came across your work. Was it my video challenge?
I think it might have been the video challenge.
I think so. So speaking from a pediatric background, love for sensory processing, love for pelvic health, when I first discovered your work, it was bringing it all together. And yeah, so my video challenge would have been May, June 2020. And doing math in my head, I'm like, is that when it was? No, that is when it was. So let's share with the audience, because I'm very familiar with your work. I see you showing up lots on social media. So let's tell the audience so that I don't feel like I'm keeping this big secret. What is it you do? Who do you help and how do you help them?
So my name is Kiara Smith. I am a pediatric pelvic health OT, and I utilize a holistic and integrative approach to my care. And so I help children who are struggling with bowel and bladder dysfunction or toileting challenges. I see kids as young as 2 and as old as 17. So a huge age range. And I see kids who are having troubles with constipation, bedwetting, urinary urgency, frequency, anything that really has to do with bowel and bladder function. And they come in to see me at my clinic or via telehealth when those things are really impacting all aspects of their lives.
At what point, I'm doing a deep dive into this already, where do your referrals come from? Because in my experience, it takes a while to identify some of these issues, that is in fact the issue. You know, how many times we have kiddos who are complaining of a sore belly, and it's, oh, you know, it's, they're nervous, or it's anxiety. And then we find out, no, it's actually constipation. Or, you know, there are so many different ways that we can look at these kiddos. And usually they do present with a number of things going on. So do your referrals come from parents who've done the research? Do you have pediatricians who are generally making those referrals because they've already gone through the checklist? Where are your people coming from?
That's a great question. So before I was in my own private practice, now here in Santa Rosa, that I exclusively treat pediatric pelvic floor dysfunction, I was actually working at a specialty children's hospital called Stanford Children's Hospital. And I was working alongside pediatric GI doctors and urologists. And of course, in that specialty care setting, they're sending referrals for those kiddos to come to see me in the rehab department. But when you're out in private practice, I would say 50% of my client referrals are coming from parents themselves, hearing about me from another parent, finding me on social media. And then the other percentage, I would say 25%, are coming from local pediatricians. So people who I've seen maybe in the capacity of coming to me directly, as the parent comes to seek out services, they tell their pediatrician about me. And then that person, basically word of mouth, goes to the pediatrician and they start referring. And the other 25%, I would say, comes from other providers, like other PTs, other OTs, other speech language pathologists who work in the pediatric space and who know about my work or who know about pediatric pelvic floor dysfunction. So that's kind of how I guess, garner referrals for my private practice now.
Mm, awesome stuff. Once a family is referred to you and you start working with them, on average, how long do you keep your clients on caseload?
Well, that's a tough one, because sometimes it just takes maybe 2 to 3 sessions, and that is weekly sessions, so less than a month of work together. If kids are having maybe trouble with feeling comfortable in the restroom and it hasn't gone for that long, meaning they're on the younger side, we're able to preemptively support them, make sure that they're not constipated, use social stories and developmental play to get them really comfortable with the idea of going to the bathroom and allowing that pee or poop to come out. Those kids are usually some of the withholders that haven't had the chronic constipation. So maybe it's an acute episode. They had a really bad tummy bug and they were a little bit fearful of having that uncomfortable feeling. So they withheld for a week. And then parents were like, oh, I remember that this lady works with, you know, peer poop withholding, and I need to reach out to her. And that's a wonderful case, because then we're able to intervene earlier. And then on the flip side, there are kids who have had chronic constipation or chronic issues with bowel and bladder dysfunction, and they may be, you know, 5, 6, childhood age, all the way up to teens. And it just gets a little bit longer in terms of the duration of care. And it's so, I want to say, we want to be curious about how they've progressed to the point of when they've landed in front of you as a provider. And when they land in my clinic, I have to be cognizant of the journey that happened before the moment they stepped into my clinic, and also to the progression of their life in terms of, you know, what are their goals and aspirations if they're older, like teens or even tweens. You know, they have these goals of going to high school, playing sports, and all these things. And how can I help them and their family get to that point in the most gentle and the most like holistic way, where we're looking at mind, body, and spirit of the child and of the family unit?
Mm. How many, my goodness, where do I want to go in terms of unpackaging this? Now, again, I'm speaking, I realize not everyone listening would have the pediatric background. So How many of your kiddos who are presenting with challenges with pelvic floor dysfunction, how many of those kiddos would you say are also struggling with sensory processing difficulties?
90%.
Okay.
A very high percentage.
What are some other common comorbidities when your kiddos are showing up in terms of pelvic floor challenges?
Autism, ADHD, Down syndrome, CP, spina bifida, gross developmental delays, mood disorders. So those are just the common comorbidities. I would say probably 50% of the clients I see are autistic.
When I think back to my days as a pediatric practitioner and how often we were looking at function and behavior and self-regulation without addressing pelvic health, it blows my mind. Like what I know now about pelvic health, because my journey in women's health and in pelvic health really started when I would say the last year of pediatrics, and then ventured into more of my private practice where I wasn't seeing the little ones as often. So once I ventured into private practice, it was more school age, but it was still high on the list. We still talked a lot. Now, when we talked more about pelvic health, it was often in terms of core stability and looking at the breath. And that was my first venture into pelvic health as a pediatric practitioner, was when we were looking at neurodevelopmental training and looking at the deep core muscles. So we did a lot in terms of breath control. And then I think back to all of the training I had in terms of mealtime, in terms of feeding, in terms of picky eating. And again, we definitely talked about it a little bit, but it was again more in terms of core stability. When you're looking at mealtimes, you know, yes, there was the sensory piece, but looking at mealtimes, looking at positioning, looking at the environment. But how many of us have dealt with pelvic floor challenges, or how many of us have dealt with constipation, or dealt with it impacts mealtime? Like it impacts feeding, it impacts so many things. And to think how many of us aren't looking at that piece of the puzzle, it's quite eye-opening, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's a strong correlation that we see with selective eaters and pelvic floor dysfunction. Hopefully one day that there'll be more research to support that, but clinically in experience in everyday practice, we're seeing these kids, it's either, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Did the selective eating cause this constipation to then escalate the dysfunction of bowel and bladder control in this child? Or is it opposite? Were they already having slow gut motility? You know, then they become backed up, then they're so full of poop that they don't have an appetite to eat. So then they are selective eaters because of that reason, or is it a combination? And I would say it's a combination. There's so many things happening. And, you know, in the clinic, I have experience too with eating, treating feeding kids and sensory eaters and selective feeders. And so it's really eye-opening to see how they, when we address one specific area, say just feeding, it actually doesn't necessarily help with the toileting all the time, because there's so many different intricacies of how that sensory system is responding. It might be under responsive in one area, but over responsive in another. And if we're not kind of addressing these areas individually and then bringing them together into function, like you mentioned, then we're not really doing the child the best intervention or plan of care when we're just looking at these pieces in isolation. And I don't mean to say that, you know, all OTs need to be sensory experienced with feeding and pelvic floor and fine motor and all these things, because that's not reality. But if we have understandings of what is happening in these areas, and we can find support for that child with another provider who can, you know, do that kind of service for them, then I think they're better served.
When we think, you know, in terms of gut motility, in terms of like also looking at that sensory processing piece, you know, as we look more into interoception, as we look more into proprioception, as we, you know, with pelvic health, that's why I had asked how many of your kiddos are presenting with sensory processing challenges. And again, is it the chicken or the egg? You know, sensory processing, how it contributes to pelvic health, or how pelvic health and issues in terms of bowel and bladder health, how they impact sensory processing. It's a two-way street, and it really requires a lot of investigative work, doesn't it, to figure out what is the root cause of what's going on. And not a lot of practitioners have the time, the availability to really do that deeper dive and work with that parent in terms of that investigative journey.
Yes, exactly. And it's really highlighting working with the parent, because as you know, as a pediatric OT, the parent is the expert of the child. You are the coach and the guide. You're the one that's gone through all the years of schooling to understand theories, to be able to implement and integrate into care, to bring that child and that family into a space of independence and flourishing kind of experience of life. And so for the parent, they have to really be open, I want to say open, to the experience of uncovering and unraveling some of these things that might not be the most comfortable. Meaning, you know, an example is a child comes into my clinic, he's 10 years old. We talk about the history of toileting, you know, how did that start, when this child started to present with some of these difficulties. And it's really hard for a lot of the parents to look back, because sometimes those times were dark times for them. They were stressed. They didn't know why their child was soiling or why they had such a hard time with toileting, and they feel shame and they feel guilt about it. And they're the ones that have to share with me as the provider the way in which they landed in my clinic. And oftentimes that takes a few sessions to get really clear on the story behind what could be happening. And we have to be very transparent, but very open ourselves as providers to receive those messages and to receive that energy and that vulnerability in our clients and how they're showing up.
Mm. I love that. And it is really honoring that this is a multifaceted approach, and that we are asking parents to talk about stuff that often is challenging to talk about. And it's bringing our parenting to the table, you know, how we discipline our kiddos, how we encourage or discourage behavioral change on certain levels. And, you know, pelvic health, it's something that not a lot of people are comfortable talking about. For those of us working in this area, there's a lot of advocacy. There's a lot of normalizing this conversation. There's a lot of education, even in terms of using the proper terminology, the proper wording. And yeah, when you're showing up for a specialist appointment, when you're showing up to work with a therapist, because generally they're showing up to work with you because things aren't going so smoothly. It's not like they're showing up to celebrate all these wins and all these great things they're doing. They're showing up because they're struggling. They're embarrassed. Things aren't going well. And I can only imagine the intense vulnerability that comes with sharing their stories and really looking at the family dynamics. Now, it's same thing with mealtime. You cannot address picky eating you can do all the sessions in the world with that child. If you do not understand the science of attachment and how that plays a role, you know, mealtimes, family dynamics, and I can only imagine, you know, toileting is not, I did a lot of training in toileting. I've taken courses in toileting, and I cannot imagine, you know, the level of, yeah, just showing up and having those discussions. But again, the investigative process in terms of what's going on and guiding a parent through that without judging them and without making them feel shamed for the decisions they've already made, for perhaps ways that they've responded, ways that they've reacted that they can see now were not beneficial, but what's done is done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really delicate conversations you're having.
Yeah. And what I like to kind of focus on is the mindfulness practice. So for myself personally, I have a personal practice of mindfulness. And I bring that and I share that with the families that come and work with me, because it's a time of, you know, coming together for the best, kind of the better, I guess, better way to be in connection and relationship with their child. And so a mindful meditation is something I start off all my sessions with to get grounded in their body, because most of the families that come to see me, their autonomic nervous system is just firing all the time. And it's not usually just one thing, right? So they're coming to see me because their child is having maybe fecal smearing or urinary incontinence at night. But oftentimes when we're doing that thing that you said with the investigative kind of work, there are other areas of their life that they're really struggling in. And this parent is just trying to hold it together. So it's kind of creating a safe space where the nervous system is in a place of comfort and not under threat. And so we use here at my clinic the polyvagal theory as a way to focus and a way to kind of navigate the development of a parent and empowering them and co-regulating with their child to be able to shift behavior. Because usually it's the behavior on the outside, but under the iceberg is all the other things that are happening with the nervous system or the, you know, slow gut or the leaky gut or the overactive bladder, all these things that we need to uncover. But we're seeing this play out as a toilet refusal. My child is in the corner wanting to wear a pull-up all the time. And we have to be more curious in our way that we're working with these families, and also how we're regulating ourselves when we're having these hard conversations. So if myself as a provider am feeling like tense and anxious in my body, a human is going to feel that, and animals do, but humans can feel that vibration and that energy. So if I'm tense and I'm kind of anxious while this person is telling me this story about their child, it's not going to help. So we use the co-regulation kind of theory to support how we move through these hard kind of situations, and we find ways to support the child and the family where they're at that are realistic and not my expectations of what I think should happen in their lives.
Yes, because when we work with kiddos, when we come in with our own timelines, that goes well, doesn't it? We've all learned. When did you first know you wanted to work in pediatrics?
I first wanted to work in pediatrics when I was in kindergarten. I first thought that I wanted to be a pediatrician because I loved my pediatrician, and so did my parents. And then when it was time for graduation and they say, oh, you know, kindergarten graduation, what do you want to be when you grew up? The girl before me said a pediatrician. Of course I couldn't do the same thing. So then I said a ballerina. But I still knew that I wanted to help kids, and I wanted to help them get better. I've always been that type of person ever since I was young to want to show compassion and empathy for people who weren't feeling that well or wanting to help in that capacity. And then once I got older, decided that I wanted to go through school to be an orthopedic surgeon. And then I knew what that was going to entail. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. I wanted to be a pediatric orthopedic surgeon. And then said, well, I still want to work in the medical field with children. What can I do? And I played sports my whole life. So learned about just kinesiology and physical therapy. And I really fell in love with the rehab sciences. So I said, okay, I'm going to be a PT. And I decided to go into PT school. I got in. I had to continue to do my volunteer hours, and you can submit them later. And when I was doing an observation with the children's center, like it's a government kind of organization, and they help children who have congenital medical diagnoses from birth all the way to 21 years of age. The PT I was observing with went on vacation, and she's like, okay, well, I'm sorry. Like, there's no other PTs. You just have to go with this OT. Like, you know, she said you can observe her. And so I observed and I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I had not known anything about OT. And I said, this is what I want to do. She was doing messy play with food. She was doing all these different kinds of gross motor sensory activities. And I'm like, this is what I want to do. So then I switched into OT because that's what I was really, really interested in.
When did the pelvic health piece come into play?
So the pelvic health piece came into play when I went to the specialty children's hospital here in Northern California, and I was an outpatient therapist working, and they said, hey, you know, are you interested in doing some training, cross training for seeing some of these patients who have, you know, pelvic floor dysfunction? I was like, sure. I mean, I have no idea what that is. Like, I didn't have a child at that time. I didn't learn about it in school. There wasn't really any kind of background information that I knew about, but it sounded interesting to me. So then I trained with one of the senior therapists there, and I absolutely fell in love with that patient population because I could weave all the things that I was doing personally with mindfulness and therapeutic yoga and all these different types of interventions that I was already using. But it was really working well with these patients and their families. And I was seeing such huge gains over small periods of time. Like I said, 2 or 3 sessions and the child was out of a pull-up. And then, you know, just the confidence that the child exudes after achieving their goals, and also to the relationship that changed between the family and the child was so inspiring to me. And it just was wonderful to see that transformation in those families.
I love hearing people's stories. So you've painted the picture of where you've come from. We've heard a little bit more about where you are right now. I want to talk a little bit more about how you're supporting OTs. And then I'm planting the seed. I do want to hear more about where you see yourself in 5 to 10 years. So we're going to get the full spectrum. Okay. So let's talk more about, because I am certain at this point in the interview, there are already listeners that are thinking, wow, she knows so much. This is such a unique approach. I didn't even think of that. How do I pick her brain for more info? Guess what, people? We've got it all taken care of. So Kiara, can you share more about the online course that you have been working on, the supports you've been working on for practitioners? Because you are, you know, I like to call them double-horned unicorns. but you know, you do have a really unique approach, and it's amazing that you're seeing this impact with your families. But in order to have a different level of impact, it is about supporting more practitioners as well. And I love that you're stepping up to the plate. So tell me a little bit more about the direction you're going with this.
So because I was more, active on social media last year, because that's when I started kind of my social media accounts and getting the word out there about pediatric pelvic health, a lot of practitioners were actually contacting me about, you know, how do I get started in this field? What kind of courses and trainings do I need? I work in women's health, but I have never worked with children. And I was just getting inundated with DMs and messages and emails about it. And I said, okay, well, one day maybe I'll do the course and provide this support for these therapists, because I will tell you, there are limited amount of practitioners who are competent in treating pediatric pelvic floor dysfunction in all the states of the United States, as well as worldwide. There's not enough of us. And there's a lot of children who are struggling with this and a lot of families who are struggling with this. So that's what was my impetus for saying, okay, now is a wonderful time to be able to share some of this knowledge and this approach that I use to kind of maybe encourage or empower therapists who are looking to get into this work, because they're seeing the dysfunction in the clinic daily, but they just don't know what to do because we never got training in school, you know. And I was afforded a wonderful opportunity because I was in a place in an organization that therapists were doing the work. But that is not the norm for this kind of work, this specialty practice area. So I decided kind of to, you know, go in, dive deep, and create a course that is looking at holistic and integrative approaches to care, like I was just mentioning, with looking at the sensory system, looking at the nervous system, looking at the neuromuscular system, how the digestive and urinary system work in general, pelvic floor anatomy and physiology, all the foundational things you need to know, but then with a twist, right? With the stuff about complementary and alternative medicine, how we use plant and flower medicine to support some of these kids in our intervention, how we use therapeutic yoga and mindfulness, sound healing, all these different things, animal assistive interventions to kind of support the overall well-being of this family and this child. So that course is actually in June, but tomorrow I am actually doing a free masterclass on potty training children with sensory differences, because that's a big, area that, that children are really needing to, have more support in, and therapists need more education to be able to share with families on how to go and guide them through that process.
This is bringing up, well, it's bringing up all the questions, and I'll get to that. But it's bringing up a lot for me in terms of sleep, meaning when I was practicing at a as a pediatric practitioner, and parents in the, you know, developmental assessment where we cover all the things in 45 minutes while also playing with the child, right? It's amazing what we do. You know, you have this child who comes in with behavioral challenges or reported behavioral challenges, and trying to, you know, in your 1 hour session, warming the child up, you know, observing performance, doing this assessment while interviewing the parent, it's quite the circus. And a lot of us are quite skilled at it. It's something else, isn't it? But what is coming up for me, sleep. And so often we, you know, I talk about this in another episode with Heather Boyd, where we didn't know any better. And often the advice we're giving around sleeping, getting kids to sleep through the night, we were doing our best with the resources and the knowledge that we had. But so much of it was based on our personal experiences that are not necessarily evidence-based, or certain cultural approaches, again, that aren't necessarily evidence-based. And that's what we would be sharing. And I'm now having these flashbacks of kiddos coming in with sensory processing challenges, with potty training issues, where so often, again, I recognize we're all doing the best that we can, but a lot of the information or the recommendations that we were providing weren't necessarily evidence-based, or looking into, you know, the level of depth that you're taking it. That is not what we were doing. That is not the level. Now, as rural generalist practitioners, again, working with all the kiddos, with all the things, but there's a lot to be said about client-centered approaches that really take into account that child's unique sensory profile, where they are in terms of cognitive ability, where they are in terms of social emotional development, looking at their language, how they're processing information. Oh my goodness. No, but what do you do when you don't have the time? You know, again, coming back to that 1 hour, right? Sure, they're having potty training difficulties, but they're also having outbursts in preschool. They're also having behavioral challenges at home. You know, they're having a lot of meltdowns, sleeping, eating. You know, when parents come in with this long list and we have 1 hour to assess, come up with a treatment plan, provide recommendations, oh my goodness, you know, how... So for therapists that are already thinking, I'm already out of time. This, you know, I don't have enough time to cover everything. Feel like I'm dropping the ball. We're adding another layer to that. How would you talk them off the ledge, so to speak? How would you, you know, should we prioritize differently? Do we focus on this as opposed to that? Do we advocate for more time with the family? Do we have any resources that you can recommend where the family may you know, perhaps is proactive and can do some of this work on their own. What's the solution, Kiara? Help us.
Yes, that's the million-dollar question, because we are so limited in our time with these families. If we can have hours upon hours, that's great, but that's not our reality. And I like to tell therapists, it's you have to prioritize. So for me, when I'm looking at the top three things that a family, so I'm always asking, what are the three things, three goals that you want to work on with your child or would like my support with? And I'm saying if I was working in like an outpatient setting where I'm not just seeing pelvic floor dysfunction, right? So eating, sleeping, and peeing and pooping. Those are the three things that parents usually will say, because that's what children have control over that parents do not. So then we have to look deeper into that. And I think for therapists out there, there are basic kind of foundational things they can implement immediately to share with families, like posture, breathing, and then also knowing what their child's bowel and bladder patterns are. And when you have that information, you can tweak things very easily that can integrate into their daily lives without necessarily doing so much additional work that the parent doesn't have time for, or even the therapist in the clinic doesn't have time for. But it's really getting clear on, you know, what are the priorities for this child. And for me, like, eating is number one, because without eating, you have failure to thrive, and there's all these other, you know, things that can happen. So we want to make sure that child is on their growth curve or following kind of that trajectory of growth and development. And then the toileting is usually the second, because that's impacting their ability to feel confident in all environments, whether that be home, school, community, and activities that they're doing with peers. And so that we know has psychological and social emotional impacts. And so we want to make sure that they're supported through that and the self-regulation piece. And when you are looking at that and having that sensory lens, the activities that you're recommending for this child are going to actually help all the different components of that goal or those issues. So with the feeding, with the toileting, and with the social emotional or social interactions with peers, to be in their body and to be present with that appropriate behavior. And so in my course, I talk about, like I said, those kind of actionable items that are very clear with, you know, the steps to good positioning on a toilet, what to look for in terms of neuromuscular control that you're already observing when you're looking at, like you were talking about, feeding. How is their trunk control? How is their balance? Are they falling all over the place? Are they having gravitational insecurity? Because those things are going to show up in the toileting task most often. And we're just not thinking about it necessarily, because we're just focused in our 45 minutes on, okay, I need to do feeding and I need to do fine motor, and then this kid is out the door. So it's just having that quick understanding of, okay, I'm observing this already. How is this going to impact this child's toileting? And then it can give you some ideas clinically as you work with this child, what do you need to work on to help support the toileting component?
To circle back, because as you're talking, I'm realizing I also didn't close the loop on your course with some other questions. This course sounds unbelievable, by the way. First question, how long is the course? And so give me more details in terms of, so at the time, people, when you're hearing this, the masterclass has already passed. So by the time we publish this, the masterclass has passed. I'm sorry, everyone. So you're like, oh, darn it. but you still have access to the course. So you're closing the cart, and then, and I'll put all this in the show notes, but how long is the course? Is it self-paced? Is it a certain amount of time? So how long do they have access? And tell me about the length of the course.
Yeah, so the course is 6 hours, and it's broken up into 3 days. So it's going to take place on June 8th, June 10th, and June 11th. And so those will be 2-hour blocks. They're going to be live, but they're also going to be available pre-recorded. I mean, in terms of, like, you can watch it, it's replayed. And it'll be available for 6 months after. Okay. So we will have that. And then on June 16th, I'm going to do a live Q&A session after the course, after you've watched it and had all these notes about what you want to ask me. The Q&A session will be 1 hour long on June 16th.
Awesome. Kiara, do you do any one-on-one work with clinicians? So in terms of mentoring, in terms of consulting, what does that look like in your business?
Yeah, so right now I don't have any formal mentorship. I do kind of informal mentorship, meaning you can sign up for an OT consult with me and we kind of do a more informal dialogue. I don't have templates or kind of a process to work. If you have certain questions or a case that you really don't know what to do, I kind of guide you along. But that might be something down the road that I will have.
This is paid though, correct?
It is paid. Okay. It's a paid mentorship. Informal one, like I said, for an hour. And then I also provide, in terms of my services for my clients, I can see direct OT kiddos here in the state of California via telehealth. So throughout the whole state and also Hawaii, I can do telehealth. And my in-person clinic sessions are in Santa Rosa, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I also provide a parent coaching service, meaning they can be anywhere in the world. And I basically help them and guide them through some of the things that we can look at and evaluate on how to support their child to be continent. And then finding providers maybe in their area or referring them to pediatric GI doctors or urologists if we need to do more of an assessment in terms of the medical issues that might be going on.
Okay, so this is a great lead up to where do you see this going? So in 5 years' time, what's the vision for your practice? What's the vision for your business?
So in 5 years' time, I hope to have a clinic space that actually has all the providers that would treat and support pediatric pelvic floor dysfunction clients in one area. So that would be someone like myself, who's a pediatric pelvic health OT. I would have a pediatric pelvic health PT, an integrative nutritionist, dietitian, a developmental psychologist, a naturopathic doctor. So having everyone under one roof so we can have really good continuity of care and all the specialists in one area for families to come and get that information, get that in education about what is going on, what is the root cause, and how can we support this child through the journey without being piecemealed. That's my goal.
Okay. And how does your online course, so as you're doing a little bit more in terms of the digital space, how does that fit into your five-year vision?
I hope to have a mentorship program where I build community and offer that mentoring for all therapists all over the world who are wanting to do this work and be impactful in serving these kids. I'm also looking to hopefully one day have a ebook or manual that has all this information for clinicians to review and use in their practice setting. And then I have a pelvic health OT group on Facebook that is free right now for people to learn more about. But hopefully one day it'll be more of a professional area and professional space where we're doing a lot of guest lectures and looking at case studies and having a more consistent meetup.
Having that community and that dialogue is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's like, you know, you're practicing alone, especially if you're only a solopreneur in practice. And it's how do you find out what other people are doing that have been helpful for their clients, or even in the business sense, like how can I scale my business to be able to offer another location or another provider to do the work that I do in my practice? Mm-hmm.
One piece that I didn't mention that I wanted to highlight, because I think you're doing a great job in terms of softening the approach now, and I shouldn't assume, I guess my question is, do you use this with your families too? But in terms of Instagram, you know, you have a lot of fun reels where you're really bringing humor into the situation, because it's not, you know, again, it's hard to talk about. And I really appreciate the humor that you're bringing in and the music, and it's taking a topic that can be quite sensitive to discuss and making it more fun, right? Yeah. And if we can bring more fun into it, that certainly helps ease the process for everyone. So is that something that, I know you're doing that in terms of social media, are you carrying that over? Is that, you know, again, chicken or the egg? Do you bring humor into your sessions, into how you're meeting your clients in the beginning, and that inspired you to do more social media? Or was it, oh, I'm going to start doing this approach in social media and recognizing, hey, there's benefit to this. Maybe I should do more in my sessions.
I think it's the first one, because kids are kids, right? So it's not just like, oh, I'm just meditating with these kids all day, but we really have fun and I normalize it for them and say, you know, sometimes like I need to let a toot out too, or like sometimes maybe I have a drop of pee, like when I really am holding my pee and I'm in the cafeteria and I really want an ice cream. And so you have to understand and meet the child where they are developmentally, and that's through play and humor. And sometimes these things are so embarrassing for them to talk about in general, and especially with a stranger. And so I have a therapy dog who is in our sessions and just provides that loving kind of chill mood. But we also use humor, you know, like I have all these little emoji, little poo stuffed animals and slime and all these things where we're normalizing that this is a body pattern. And sometimes the body gets confused. Sometimes it does. And this is what I help kids do. And I help them and we talk about these things. And it's okay if you don't want to talk about these things with me right now. Maybe one day you will. We're going to talk about this like really funny story. And so like that's how we open up the conversations. And of course, it's a different way that I talk to older kids versus younger kids. But it's really understanding development and what they can cognitively understand. And if kids are you know, delayed in any way in speech or expressive language and that sort of thing, we come up with the ways that they can receive the messages, whether it be pictures or just sensory play and or music, and then helping families, you know, integrate these like toilet sit times or the breathing exercises and all these types of things. So it's not just, you know, we expect children to be able to sit there nicely and listen. It's not like that at all. It's very fun and playful. There's bubbles, there's shaving cream, there's all these kinds of fun things.
I want to go visit your clinic.
Come on over.
border, please open soon. I'm ready for my trips down south. my goodness, we can't open up this world fast enough. Okay, so as we wrap up, there were so many great things shared in this episode. You're making me miss so many parts of my pediatric practice. I'm not going to lie. I'm like, oh, I forgot how much I love doing that work. Where can people find you? So where are you hanging out? Where can people find you?
People can find me on Instagram at Aloha Integrative Therapy. That is the name of my clinic. You can also find me on my business page on Facebook, Aloha Integrative Therapy, and then also the Pediatric Pelvic Health OT group on Facebook. You just have to request to join, answer the membership questions, and it's a free group for professionals, healthcare professionals, looking to learn more about pelvic health for children. And we have case studies, we have monthly meetings, and we have people asking questions about, you know, what do I do when a child is doing this? Or is there someone in Maryland that can see a child that's 7 years old with bedwetting? And it's a really nice community to just bounce off ideas and then also help find resources for those who are looking for it.
Wow. So many great things. I love this. All right. I will link all of that in the show notes so that people don't have to go searching. Kara, thank you so much for sharing more of your story, for sharing more of your vision, but also for doing the work that you're doing. You know, this is having a tremendous impact on so many families, those who you're working with directly, but that you are bringing this over to the work you're doing to support more clinicians, I think is tremendous value for our profession. So thank you for shining your light brightly. We need that.
Thank you so much for that wonderful compliment. It definitely is something that I felt a little hesitant, to be honest, at first. But I thought, well, I have this light, like you said, and I have this experience and this knowledge, what good is it for me to just keep it to myself? And when I know that there's a lot of families out there and kids who are struggling. And so that was the impetus of me really to say, okay, I guess now is the best time to do it, because it's never going to be a good time. And I'm happy to do that. And I'm really excited to see what other providers are going to do in this space.
Good stuff. My goodness. I'm looking forward to this replay myself so that I can re-listen to it and get all of this good stuff. Okay. Take care. And please stay in touch. I've already, you know, I'm following you on social media and I'm going to continue. Now I have to check out other things that you're doing. But thank you again for joining me for today. This was really informative. And yeah, like I said before we started recording, I could talk about this all day long. You know, there's so many crossovers in terms of our interests and our background. So it's really exciting. It is exciting to see where you're going with this work. And I wish you all the best in smashing that 5-year goal for your vision and where you want to go with this.
Well, thank you so much, Melissa, and you take good care.
Talk to you later.
Aloha.
Okay, that was a pretty awesome interview, wasn't it? We have a lot of OTs who are trailblazing in pelvic health, and I love that we are seeing more pediatric therapists jumping on the bandwagon as well. This work is so needed. If you enjoyed this episode, please help me to spread the word on its awesomeness and share it with one of your OT friends or colleagues. You can also go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review on the show. That's super helpful as well. And hopefully, we'll see you back here later in the week where we're sharing more tips and tools to help you do things differently and go rogue. Take care, everyone.